Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to The Promised Land, a show about Manchester United and part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. I'm breathless. I'm honestly, Rob, what in the world is Manchester United?
We're
about 48 hours, not even 48 hours from the FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
And still, we'll talk about the Coventry game today.
We're in the cup final, Scott. We're in the cup final.
It doesn't matter how you get there, as long as you get there.
Silverware, everything is measured by trophies and silverware. We're in the cup final and we beat the mammoth Midlands giant called Coventry City. Like, yay. You were there, Scott.
I'm sure everybody is really, really head in the sky, yeah. Really happy. Sarcasm. First minute of the show.
Oh,
this is we'll reflect on Coventry, because whatever the hell that was, we'll have to debrief it because it's still fresh in the minds. United have got a game tomorrow as we record this. They play Sheffield United, who are also not very good at top level football, but you know, whatever.
Might be worse than
what can you expect? I don't know. We'll see. You know, I welcome them to Old Trafford and then Burnley at the weekend. But they are in the FA Cup final against Manchester City on May 25th, which is great news. Anyway, Scott and Rob back again for the Promised Land, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the audio show on Apple and Spotify. Give us a 5-star review as well. And leave a nice comment, please, if you would. Watch us on YouTube, where you can like the stream, subscribe, and leave a comment as well. Hit the notification bell so you never miss a show. And follow us on social media at @_ScottSaunders on X, Instagram, and TikTok, @_Rob_B on X, and @TPLMUFC on X as well. We'll be talking at the start about Coventry, because we just have to. We can't. We were actually going to do a podcast from, because I was at Wembley the other day, kind of surprised but not at what I was seeing. We were going to do a pod, but Rob, birthday week, weekend, etc. We couldn't make it work. But, you know, we've had some time to reflect, and I still feel the same way as I did the other day, but we'll do our best to...
So glad we didn't go live after that game, Scott.
Yeah, so are you?
So glad, like watching it. It's just like, what do you say to that? You got to the cup final, you should be happy. And yet, as you use the word at the top of the show, embarrassing. So we'll put a bow on that today. And it's quite nice to have let it percolate for a couple of days, I think.
Yeah, we'll talk Coventry. We won't do much ahead of Sheffield United, but we will talk about what's come out in the last day or two. Mm. Obviously, Ten Hag's position as manager is under scrutiny. Jason Wilcox has started his new job. He was there at Wembley watching whatever the hell that was. I think he remarked as he walked through the mix zone, interesting first day at work. And
is that what you heard? Brilliant.
And yeah, interesting first day at work it was. He's in there now. He's been tasked with a bunch of things that we'll get into later in the show, but we'll also talk about Tommy, Tactical Tommy, as he's been dubbed, Thomas Tuchel, who is former Chelsea manager, former, well, current Bayern, soon to be former Bayern manager. Used to manage Dortmund, used to manage PSG, won the Champions League with Chelsea. Could he be the man to take over from Erik ten Hag? We'll talk about the pros and cons of that later on in the show. But yeah, I don't know how long we'll be running for, Rob. This does seem to be a lot to cram in. So cast your mind back to about 6 p.m., 6:30 p.m. on Sunday.
Mm.
United, for 70 minutes, did what they were meant to do. There were some scares, but, you know, on the whole, United were okay. And then one goal goes in after some players switch off. And was it Ellis Sims who scored the first goal? He shinned it in. Yes. Lovely goal, but was unmarked in the box.
Yeah, terrible marking from United.
Yeah. And then, oh, look, collapse of the century again happens. Mm. And then United were, well, they're through to the FA Cup final via a penalty shootout, but also via the help of a toenail. Because Coventry could have, if their player had held his line, you know, a little tiny bit, that goal would have been onside, and that would have been probably the most embarrassing defeat. One of the most embarrassing defeats in the history of the football club. You know, it was
the most,
that's,
I think,
not hyperbole. Like that is how bad it could have got. And everybody could see it happening. And that's the worst thing, because we've seen it happen so many times. But go on. Tell me what you were thinking.
Well, thank God, first of all, that I wasn't at Wembley. You know my thing about when I go to Wembley with United and it's awful, and I blame myself. Like, you know, if I'd gone to Wembley, we'd lost 4-3. I think I might have had to have retired from football. But you were there, Scott. And I think the thing is that, you know, the perfect game at 3-0, you've managed the game. You know, Casemiro hasn't looked a problem at centre-back, which was a big worry. You've just gone through the motions as the Premier League team against the Championship team. And you just said they're about clocking off. I don't even know if it's about clocking off anymore. I just think they haven't got a clue what to do in certain scenarios. Like, you're 3-0 up, so what do we do? You know, did we keep the ball? Do we go for a fourth? How do we play this game of football? I think, you know, today's show is going to be about potential successes for Erik ten Hag. And I think what you saw there at Wembley is exactly why Erik won't be the manager next year. You know, this is not a personal attack on Erik ten Hag. It's about the team. You know, so we can't really talk anymore about Erik because, like you and me have both said, we support him, haven't we, over the whole period of time. But Ineos are going to look at that. And as you said, Jason Wilcox will watch that. And if he actually had an outward bodily language, he'd have watched it through his fingers going, Southampton weren't this bad. And here we are at Man United. So it would have been the biggest embarrassment of all time if you lost that game 4-3. It would have been. And even still, people are trying to go, oh, it was off. It shouldn't be offside and all this. Well, it was offside, people. Like, first and foremost, it's a toenail offside, but a toenail offside is offside. So
yeah, can we just do the housekeeping on that? If United scored that goal, people would be overjoyed that it was ruled out. Like,
of course.
Whatever problems you have, the offside law. Like, yeah. It's offside. Under the current rules, it's offside. And that's the way it is.
It's going to be quite a chunky show today anyway in terms of time. But, you know, we could have gone into like what Forrest did as well and all of that. And the whole thing is that football clubs always film aligned in bad moments. But like, nobody in VAR was going, oh, this is Man United, so let's give them the decision. It's not. It's just offside. In the same way that a referee makes three bad calls maybe on a penalty, and VAR is not allowed to overturn the referee in those kind of scenarios. So, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, Forrest doing that with what they did afterwards, and obviously that's a big story at the moment. But I think the whole thing with Coventry is people going, oh, we were robbed of that moment. Well, no, that's why you got VAR, to be able to implement the rules properly. And it was offside. Sorry, Coventry. Like, I thought Coventry deserved to win. I did at that point. 4-3. I was done with the game, Scott. 4-3. I stood up and I actually applauded. I clapped Coventry because I thought they deserved it. I thought they battled hard. And as a Championship team with less talent, they made Man United look stupid for that period after the 60-minute mark. So I just think, I don't know, you win the game, you get to the cup final, but it feels completely hollow, doesn't it? doesn't feel like a, you can't celebrate it, because if you play like that against Man City, just no bother. Just don't bother turning up. City will just walk through the motions and rip you to shreds. And, you know, you'll be 1-0 after, what, 20 seconds again, like last year. So United need to be better, don't they? But again, I think we've run out now, Scott, of the miles of saying, what can Eric do? Because Eric just does Eric. That's all he does. He just does the same thing all the time. And that's not going to save you your job. You see, the news yesterday, of course, is that Eric's on trial now because Wilcox is at the club.
How many times are we going to say he's on trial?
I was about to say, didn't we do that show like 3 months ago when we said when Ineos came in, well, effectively now he has
breaking
to make
news,
sure.
New person enters and it also declares Ten Hag is on trial. Like
exactly like
I'm the sure man, he's like, not been watching what United are doing for the last, on the pitch anyway.
Exactly.
The last 2 months.
Like Ineos haven't been season. Ineos haven't been at absolutely every game like they have been. They've been there and they've looked glum and they're not happy with what they're watching. Neither are we. So Wilcox might get the final, I don't know, the trigger pull, like as it goes, but I don't think that's true either. I think Ashworth and Berardi will be involved. They are involved and they'll make their decision. They might have already made their decision. People are saying to me on Twitter again, replying, how do you know? Well, we know bits, but at the end of the day, it's just also Man United are a vibes football club at the moment. It needs to be a serious football club. And that's maybe Eric's biggest failing. Cup semi-final was just a dichotomy of that, wasn't it? It's absolutely what we already know about this football team.
Like, I'm now in the camp of, like, I just don't think, well, everything needs changing. But I can't help not ask this question. Like, the game management on the whole, which has been a pattern all season, was really bad from 70 minutes. After they conceded the first goal, you just knew, oh no, they scored one. No, they're going to score another two. Just wait for it to happen. How much, like, to me, how can you be professional players and allow that to happen so consistently? I know that the manager gives you instructions. The only thing I can think of is the tactics are so mad that you're running around and your head is gone because you're so knackered. That's the only thing I can really think of. And maybe that's fair and legitimate. And I do think that if United had, I said this to Sean who was with me, if United had like a bunch of 6'3", like agile, amazing athletes with great technical ability, maybe you wouldn't see half of these problems. But the cold reality is you're not actually going to get that. And what Ten Hag wants to do, the tactics, whether they even in their purest and best form, whether they even work, is still up for question.
Yeah.
But Ten Hag is obviously has a way that he would like to play. And I think for 70 minutes of that game, you could see because of the technical differences and the quality differences between the two teams, it actually worked for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
United managed to pen Coventry in. But how, like, I think the collective, yes, should take blame. And the manager is not, the manager has to take blame here. But look at the players. Like, I'd be remiss to not mention this. Like, the players surely have to do better than that.
Of course, and I think the bottom dollar always is that the performances always come down to players. Let's be honest, like the manager, whatever the manager decides to do, whatever his tactics are, is up to the players to take the tactics, interpret it, and manage the game themselves. But I think there's also, I think it's remiss to kind of just take away the element of what the tactics mean. And I know that's the boring point for football fans because they want to sit in front of the TV and they want to kind of go, just go, entertain me, we play well, we win games. And he said up until 3-0, they'd done that. But they'd done that because they had superior talent. They got 11 internationals out there against a championship team. But there's no doubt that these shock and awe tactics that Ten Hag has just settled on this season do not work fundamentally in a football sense all the time. They work for periods of games, and that's why you can't manage a football match. So a football match, Scott, is 98 minutes now. That's how long you have to manage a game. It's not 90 minutes. It's not 80 minutes. It's not 70 minutes. It's 98 minutes. And you've got to make sure that when you get to 100-minute mark that you've looked after the game. Man United have not done that once this season. I don't think they did it much last year either, being honest. So I think that's what you need to address, and that's what Wilcox will be looking at. It'll be like, how do you win games 1-0, 2-0? 2-1, you know, because that is the bread and butter of football. That's what City do. They don't win every game 5-6-0, do they, Scott? They go manage games and look after themselves. And I think the semi-final is that at 3-0, yeah, you can take your foot off the gas a little bit, but you've still got to manage stuff. You've got to do stuff. And I don't see that from Eric from the touchline. You know, the two substitutions that he made, Garnacho and Manu, are the same substitutions he's made multiple times. And he'll say because they're kids and wants to look after them and all of that. That's fine. But the vibe at that moment is that they're probably not your two that you want to take off, being honest. So it's not a big swipe at Eric, that. But at the end of the day, there were other people you could have taken off. There is just the truth. So I think the thing is that game management is more than just the same substitute over and over again. I don't think that's game management. I think game management is that what's the opponent doing and what can we do to squeeze them and make tight. And United are not good at that at all, are they? They're not very good at adapting to opposition when the opposition change it up. Coventry got that goal, Scott, 3-1. And 5 or 10 minutes before, United, you could see it stopped. Just stopped in their tracks. And I'm sure the manager's not saying, stop running, lads. But there's no communication there. It's nothing more of like, whoa, 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 reset. Come on. You know, it's 3-0, but be professional. It's just very flat. And that's been the whole season, really. It's just the whole season, I think, in one game. But how many times have we said that?
I was in the post-match press conferences, and Mark Robbins said at 3-0 that United thought they'd won. I think that's the case, really. Suggestions are that Ten Hag gave his players a right dressing down, as he should have, because I think ultimately he's not out there controlling them. But I do think, you know, what United's style and this season is mad. Like, it is just mad. The amount of sprints, I don't know what the sprints are, like numbers versus other teams, but you can just tell that they're not capable of doing it. Like, a lot of these players, I'm looking at like a list of these players now and which manager they were signed by. I'll try and tally it up maybe, but there's a lot of Solskjaer, there's a lot of Ten Hag, there's some Mourinho, there's some Van Gaal, and there's some academy. So it's a big mishmash of personalities, player traits, all of this. It was just not cut out really to play this way. And Ten Hag is just, I've always said this about Pep, about Klopp. I would like top managers to not live and die by their philosophy. Like, fair enough, you can hold certain fundamentals and maybe you can you evolve over time, but it just seems like it's so naive to keep playing one way. You know, like at that point, at 3-0, just stop, just close the game down, just drop in and just end it.
Keep like, the ball and be boring.
Do, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The day is done. Like, everyone go home. You know, you just said there about philosophy, Scott. If your coaching philosophy works and you win trophies, yeah, stick with it. But Eric Ten Hag said something very interesting at the back end of his Ajax spell when we came to Man United. He said, I'm not one of those coaches. He says, I don't have a philosophy. I make sure my tactics fit my players. Is that what we've seen the last 12 months? That his tactics fit his players? Like, I don't know. Like, you just said there about being signed by managers. Do the players go on the training pitch every day and go, well, I was a Mourinho signing, I can't do this? No, they don't. They're human beings. They're footballers. You find tactics that work for everyone at the end of the day, for the whole team. So I think that's the weird thing about Eric, because I don't even think this is his philosophy. I don't think this is. We've not seen it going back over the year. Counter-press is part of it. But like, some of this stuff is wild. It's mad. You just said there, he's not on the pitch. Well, do you know what? He's about 6 inches from the pitch for 90 minutes in the technical area. He's the 12th man. Yeah, he is the 12th man. I'm at games staring at him thinking, come on, manager, I want to see more from you. I want to see that you're changing stuff. Sometimes you get it, Scott. Sometimes you don't. And I think with Eric, I don't know, has he run out of ideas? Has he just kind of gone, this is the best I've got? And I, you know, Steve, Mr. McLaren, you know, what should we do? You're an English, former England head coach. You know, what do you reckon here? And Steve McLaren sat there like this. I don't know. Feels like end of days, doesn't it?
With an umbrella.
We've not seen the umbrella at Old Trafford yet, have we? We've not seen that.
Oh, it's just a brolly.
He does look internally miserable at the moment. Again, he does the warm-up, Scott, and I watch all the warm-ups. And he's there, and he does the same stuff every time. And I'm a bit like, this feels very old school. Like, this feels a bit Roy Hodgson to me. Do you know what I mean? I want to see something different. And I don't know with Eric, is that he settled on his tactics. He's going to live and die by them, Scott. But do you know what? He's going to die by them. That's it. It just feels like the end of days, as I said. And I don't see him being able to do anything different now. And that's why I don't really want to talk about him personally, because I think ultimately he's failed at that. He's failed at having the tactics.
Well, we just did for 10 minutes.
We have to in the end of a game, don't we? But like, I don't, in future, like, we don't want to do a show every week of going, is this the end for Ten Hag? Because it's like, you make your minds up, people. Like, there's a load of you out there that literally won't say Ten Hag out or anything like that because you don't believe in it. And that's cool. And there's a load of people that are the complete polar opposite. And that's also cool. But it's just going to be a business decision, I think, for Ineos at the end of the day. They'll look at it and just say the team is failing. And I think I put on the end of my tweet for this show, Man United are a team that literally haven't got a clue what to do on a football pitch most weeks. Like, and that's how you feel when you come away from games. Is that how you felt, Scott, in the presser? Did you think, yeah, United managed their stuff really well? No, you probably sat there thinking, right.
God, I was speaking to a few people. I spoke to Carl from The Athletic. I spoke to Gaz Drinkwater, who does comms for Radio Manchester.
Yeah.
Radio Manchester. A few other people. Everyone was just in there like, what?
Bewilderment, isn't it? Utter bewilderment. And that's what I didn't tweet or anything after the game. I just sat and was just like, let it go. Because it's like, it's the same thing. And, you know, you were at the game, so you have to do the job and get on and be in the presser. But what do you ask the manager? Like, do you say to the manager, why did that happen? And he'll say the same thing. Oh, we should control games. We should do this. Well, what are you doing to control games? We can't see it. It's like, you know, it's just talk. So, I don't know. Like, when... So Jim Ratcliffe ran the marathon, got a personal best, ended up at Wembley Stadium, sat in his seat, and then you're
like, personal best at 71, or you just
I couldn't drive it. I couldn't drive it that quick. If I was it, I would have got on a bike, I'd be slower. But you know, like, he does that and he gets to Wembley and he's like, right, I want to see my team win now, don't I? You know, I'm putting billions in this club, and then you see that, you're not gonna come away and go, well, let's just give it more time. You're not. You're gonna try and do something different and give that more time. So yeah. It's a shame. I liked Eric. He was the person I wanted for the job. But week after week, game after game, we just see that this team is not managed very well, Scott. It's just not prepared for all scenarios, and it has to be.
I'm quite conscious to say, and I would like to reinforce this, that it's not only the manager's fault, and the reason why I'm so often looking at the players first is because a lot of these players are there for the wrong reasons. And the manager leaving is another potential way for them to get another chance. And I just do not want that to happen. And I hope that Ineos will look at that and they'll analyze what the culture's like, what the fits are like, and start changing that culture, which is ingrained in this dressing room. It's a culture of failure. It's a culture of, I don't care enough. And there's a lot of players in there who just aren't really fit and cut out for, you know, this type of football. Just to talk about Casemiro for a second. Like, I think we've given him stick this season. We have. Mm. But I thought he was all right at centre back. Yeah. He got chucked in there. He's played there before, obviously, for Real Madrid. And I think he played there for Porto a bit as well, maybe. But there was a moment where United were playing their mad 1-1 1v1. It was either in the last few minutes of the 90 or in extra time.
I think the fourth goal as well. The fourth goal that wasn't.
he was caught one-on-one. He was caught one-on-one, and seeing him have to track back, like running slower than Jim Ratcliffe in the London Marathon. I felt for him at the time, but that's just what we're working with.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of change that is needed at United is so stark. Like, there's so many players that just need a new challenge. Maybe we'll talk about Marcus Rashford another day. I know he's not got a lot of stick. Maybe, I don't think that's one for today, really, but I've seen he's been getting a lot of stick. He got a lot of stick off the United fans, which I didn't hear at the time, because I wasn't in that section really, but the United fans gave him a pretty heavy boo. And it's not the first time, maybe the worst we've seen, but you know, it's broken. The football club is broken. And Jason Wilcox, Ratcliffe, Dan Ashworth need to sink their teeth into this next over the summer and start fixing things. And we'll talk about a manager that maybe could limit the amount of change and maybe force the change a bit slower than I think we're all looking at. Especially me, I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, like, rip it all up, get rid of them all, and bar six, and start again. But maybe United will stumble upon a manager who can just transition them through a 2-3 year period a little bit slower. But then there's the what style of football do we want to play? Does this guy fit right? Whatever happens. I mean, even if this style of football that Erik ten Hag wanted to play, even if that was in its perfect form, would it actually work? I don't know.
Like, don't think so. Being honest.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy 2, get 2 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I wish it would, but do you know what it's got? It's incompetency, and that's the problem. And again, you know, I always refer to especially football matters as like business, and is that, again, your business is failing. If there's incompetency, then you deal with that immediately. That's the fire. Put the fires out, and then you can build with it. You can't just change things like you just said about the players, and I fundamentally agree with you wholeheartedly. But one thing at football clubs you can't change in wholesale is a whole squad. The one thing you definitely can change straight away is the managerial team. And that's the problem, I think, for Ten Hag, is that we know that when these players don't run or don't take on instructions, it's not all Eric's fault. But the communication line between the manager and the team is what wins you games. That is the truth. That's why Guardiola is so successful. It's why Klopp has been successful. So, yes, that's where you stand now. And I think that's what Ineos will appraise, is that they'll go, there's something not working between what the manager wants, what the team are doing. So, therefore, the first bit you take out generally is the manager, put another manager in, and then you work through with the players and you take out the players who are really taking taking something out of your football club. You just mentioned Marcus there. You know, Marcus's neck is on the block. It is. His performances are trash. So you have to look at that and do it like without emotion. Do you know what I mean? You have to say to yourself, and I'm sure Ineos will do that and say, well, you know, if we're going to stick with Rashford, then at least we need a coach who's going to empower him to do what he wants to do. Because I think what you see with Rashford in this system is that he's useless. He can't do it and it doesn't work for him. So you either change the tactics or you change the player. And I think what we'll see now in the summer is we'll get a bit of both. You know, you'll get players going out the door because it'll be like, now we can't work with this lot. But then there'll be players coming in with new tactics and a fresh approach. I think that's all you can do. Just try and be erudite in your decisions. Just try and do that and keep a calm head. We know that's the Ratcliffe way. It's what he wants to do. He'll take his time doing it. But at the same time, I don't think he suffers fools gladly.
We'll talk about Thomas Tuchel in a little while, but let's transition on. Jason Wilcox obviously has started. There's a decent bit from James Ducker in the Telegraph, which is floating around. I'll take a pick from it. It's Wilcox who's principally been tasked with implementing an overarching playing vision and ensuring recruitment is no longer of the scattergun variety, but anchored towards a specific methodology, identity, and style of play. So when we talk about managers who will bring something different, which is the problem this entire time, really. And what I talk about with, you know, having players who are managed by Ten Hag who are signed by other managers who can't run, essentially. Avoid that initially. But and maybe the appointment of Tuchel flies in the face of that. But or maybe you can see a way where it is the stopgap, I guess. You know, mm-hmm. maybe it's the safe option for a few years while United figure themselves out and start morphing their squad into whatever they want it to be in the long term. Wilcox was appointed by, the appointment was driven by Omar Berada, who's come in. And obviously he worked at City before, and it talks about, and we know all this already, but they're looking at hiring people with a track record of excellence. And, you know, Ten Hag, according to, we've not heard anything yet, whether he stays or goes. I know Rob presumes that he will leave, but it's obviously not all confirmed yet. But just on Wilcox, like, what are your initial thoughts on him being brought in? Obviously, there's been chat about Ashworth as well.
Mm-hmm.
How long that takes, who knows? There's been some rumors about him and his compensation package being agreed. I think they've been debunked, but you never know. I think he'll be in before the summer regardless. But your thoughts on Wilcox?
Yeah, I think it's a great appointment. And the reason why I think that is that one of the fundamental things broken at Manchester United is this communication between the board and the football arm. And the whole thing is that must be in sync. You must have people that trust each other and can talk to each other openly and be honest. And let's be honest again with Richard Arnold. That's exactly the opposite of what we had with John Murto. You know, he's a complete patsy, not help the football club at all. So I think when you look at Jason Wilcox, you look at his record and what he's done. He's done a really good job at Southampton first and foremost, but obviously very highly thought of at Manchester City. Revamped part of the academy there. Funnily enough, Jadon Sancho was one of his players, so that's an interesting thing to watch going forward. Maybe there's something there. But I think the thing is Wilcox is that it's power in numbers, Scott. So it's like when you look at the structure now, you know, Berada, Ashworth, you look at Wilcox, and then you look at the Ineos surrounding of already Ratcliffe, of Brailsford, of Jean-Claude Blanc, that they're putting this powerhouse team together. So everything below it from the manager down has the real-time support to go and coach. And that's it. And I think this is why, you know, Eric might survive if you can convince them that he's got a plan. It's just that we're not seeing it on a football pitch. I think when you look at Thomas Tuchel was linked to the Manchester United job, you know, effectively two, three years ago when he was on the back end of Chelsea. And we knew that Todd Boehly didn't really get on with him, didn't like him, and it was kind of falling apart. But that didn't happen. Obviously, United went with Ten Hag, and I think that was the right choice at that time. But he's had these discussions with United before, so it's been in his head once or twice in the past. I just think with him leaving Bayern Munich as he has, is that the kind of opportunities go to Manchester United, which many would describe as a poison chalice. Like I've described Liverpool that in recent days. But United, coaches have seen United as something difficult to go and manage. I still think United are a big pool. So if he comes back to the Premier League and he has a new structure around him, Thomas Tuchel, then I think he thinks he'll be able to do something with this squad and with new signings. And I think that he's desperate to come back to the Premier League and prove himself. So, like, you know, actually, I won the Champions League, but I wasn't given long enough at Chelsea. And look what's happened with Pochettino in the last year. I wasn't particularly wrong with what I was saying at the time about the squad. So, yes, Tuchel's not exciting. You know, he's not the sexy candidate, Scott. But who is? Like, you and me talked about Kieran McKenna the other day. And I still like that call. Like, I still think Kieran McKenna is someone who I'd be happy to go with. But also, I think Ineos, with this whole best-in-class thing, is that Tuchel's a Champions League winner and he's got the CV. So they might look at that and just say, yeah, he's the kind of guy we want to go to now for the next 2 years, reset the project, and let's see if we can move on with this manager. And if we can't, do you know what? 2 years on, pat on the back, shake of hands, nothing's not personal. We go and get another coach that we now think is actually better for our project. So I think that's kind of where we stand at the moment.
Subscribe wherever you get your pods. Apple and Spotify, you can find the audio version of the show. Give us a 5-star review. Leave us a nice comment as well and subscribe on YouTube, the Promised Land of Man United podcast. Like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment, notification bell, hit that as well. And follow us on social at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC on X as well. Speaking of the social media channels, on my Twitter or X yesterday, I know you tweeted about it. And so did I. I said, yeah, I think Thomas Tuchel's getting the United job. And I also did a TikTok on why I think he's getting the United job. But I'll also try and repeat some of those points here, just in case you haven't seen it, and in a longer form as well, while talking to Rob. Some people took that tweet that I put on X as, wow, it's happening. And I had to come back and say, hey, guys, this isn't based on anything. This is just a hunch, because I think it makes a lot of sense. And I'm not saying that this is what I would choose to do, but I could see the thinking behind it. When you mentioned the best in class line there, Rob, I think how many best in class managers available out there are there? He's probably the best one. And I also think, like, anytime I've heard Tuchel speak about United going into a game against them or speak in general, I think this is the job he wants. Maybe this and Bayern. These have always been the two jobs that he wants, you know? And I feel like for Ineos coming in, it does seem to make a lot of sense. It really does seem to make a lot of sense, because I know I talked earlier, and I'm just tying back to this point, of how United need a clear out, how they need to get rid of a bunch of these players because they're not fit for whatever the manager wants to do. Tuchel is the happy medium between, like, you think of players that he could use, like Harry Maguire stays, probably.
Yeah.
Bruno Fernandes probably gets used in the right position.
Yes.
Jadon Sancho probably comes back in. Yeah. Rashford, I don't know, but could you see him playing in a front two with Højlund behind, with Bruno Fernandes behind? Probably.
He can, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and that seems to make a lot of sense. And then you think of, oh, you, could United use João Palhinha? Probably. You know, like, put him alongside Kobbie Mainoo. And then you've got and then you only need a defensive a number six, really, and a centre back. And then you think, that's actually not that far away. Like, if they're working through with a coach who is actually, I know this season you look at Bayern and they've massively underperformed versus Leverkusen. They could win the Champions League, by the way. They could win the Champions League. They've got a decent chance.
Yeah.
I don't think they will, but they could. You know, when you look at that team, and when you look at what he's done at Bayern this season, yeah, maybe it's not the best case. It's not the best case for it. But we think back to, like, his teams at Chelsea and his team at Dortmund and what he did with PSG under difficult circumstances as well. PSG is a difficult club to manage.
Very much so.
Like, that Champions League final against City with Chelsea, the tweaks he made,
totally.
That's probably what you would look at, like, as a stopgap manager. I'm not saying he'd be here for a decade. I don't think anybody will think that. But it does seem to make, he does tick a lot of boxes, even if they aren't the ones which where we talk about playing style and exciting football. You know, it does seem like it's a safe pair of hands until it explodes.
Until he has a fight.
It will. Probably. Yeah. It probably will.
Yeah. And I think I said on a show last week, you know, the average tenure of a manager is about 18 months to 2 years. So again, when we think about long-term, we can't use Guardiola as an example. We can't use Klopp as an example. They are like the exception to the rules. You're looking at, you're like, when we, that's why we describe them as projects now, is that you're not looking for your next Fergie because it doesn't exist. There's no top manager out there who is a Fergie. You have to go and look for 2 to 3 years. And I think this is where we are now. And you either decide, Scott, that you stick with Ten Hag for the next year or two, and that's what you do, but it doesn't look good because it feels wrong. You know, you're watching the football and it's actually not very good and the tactics are not very good. Or you go with someone who's got the track record that you could say, yeah, 2 to 3 years, and then we evaluate it. So we'll see how it goes. And yeah, maybe this guy, like, he wants the United job. So maybe he is the guy that in 2-3 years' time, you go, yeah, we're happy with the tactics, we're winning games, we're in the Champions League again, and we're settled, and we've built something now. And now the guys behind the scenes, the Ashworths and the Wilcoxes and all of those guys can do their jobs by recruiting and getting the right players for this manager. So that's, I just think that's just so blatantly obvious. Like, it just, it's too easy not to be what happens. And I think the thing is with Tuchel is that I'm not a massive fan of his style of football, but he is the happy middle ground between a Ten Hag and, say, a more Mourinho type, you know, in terms of functionality. He's not got the flair, but he does set teams up well. He does have players that really like him. So he's the guy that you could drop into this kind of squad. You've just named names off there off the top of your head in the squad already. And you would think that he would use them in his system better than, say, Ten Hag is. But I think Bruno's the best one. Like, really is. Like, play Bruno as the 10 and build that attack around Bruno, yeah? Because Bruno's the guy that if you play him as the 10, great. If you play him as the 8, not so great. Play him as a 6-8, want to go home. So, like, it's just how it goes. And I think United feel that. Rashford, you just said there. You know, Rashford as a pressing left-sided player, not going to work ever. So if you've got a new coach and he plays a system that maybe solidifies the midfield and makes the fullbacks go and do some of that more work on the outside and tuck in and do all those things, and then you allow Rashford to be a forward, you might get some more out of Rashford. I don't know, Scott. Like, it's just obvious. Like, I think that's where you stand at the moment with this kind of crossroads. And that's what Jason Wilcox will be looking at right now. And he'll be saying, well, why are these players failing? Because they're all internationals. They're all going to be at the Euros. They're all going to be at future World Cups. This is not a bad squad, but we're seeing the same old bad stuff happening, aren't we, with every incarnation? So they'll be looking to kind of put the chopping block on that and say, right, what can we do to bring stability and stop this incompetency? Because they're incompetent, Scott. That's what it is. All of it is incompetent when you watch them. They are not a serious football team. They're vibes. Everything is done on vibes. You know, we can attack teams, we can hurt teams, but then we can't do the basics. And that's what happened, obviously, against Coventry, and it's happened all season long.
Now, Rob and I both tweeted about this yesterday. As I mentioned, I did a TikTok on this, which people are commenting on, but got some replies. What do you guys think? Or what do the people who follow us on social think? Tanner Lamb says, I agree with a lot of what you say, but not this, in the sense of why Thomas Tuchel would be a good fit. Mm-hmm. Phil Steventon says, Rob, that's in line with my thinking. Next coach in, I think, or hope he will be there for 2-3 years at least, but lay a lot of the groundwork for the next one if it's to be successful.
Yeah.
Matthew Roberts says, I was really disappointed when United didn't seize the opportunity to recruit Tuchel in 2022. Chelsea sacking him was a weird decision, so it proved. And I thought if this Chelsea team plays some wonderful dynamic football, he can certainly get a performance out of Mason Mount. I didn't even mention Mason Mount.
He loves Mason Mount. Like, Tuchel talked about Mount before and thinks he's one of the best players in the world. So, like, Mount plays as a forward for him and plays in that left side in that bracket. And you talk about Rashford coming inside. Is that so? Maybe there's something there for Mason Mount with this manager.
Adam Bond says, I think there's a very high chance of him getting the job, and I wouldn't be opposed to it. And he's not the trendy option, but as you underlined, he's tactically astute. Mm-hmm. We've got loads here. There's no managerial option which excites me. The name is cut off here. Sorry, Rob. Nagelsmann intrigued me, but that's about it. I worry about Tuchel's record of falling out with people. If I had to pick a name, it'd be Kieran McKenna. We need to decide on a footballing style, system and philosophy before we bring another coach in. I agree with that. And I see why. But really, getting that and installing it like instantaneously is going to be tough. Like,
it's tough.
Mm-hmm. I know we talked about Kieran McKenna the other day and how he could be molded into that, but hey, it's more risky. It's a lot more in line with what the likes of Arsenal are doing. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there's a big chance that your season this season implodes like this. Whereas you think Tuchel would at least get United to fourth or third, like. Really, with minimal squad work.
Yeah.
And
without cost. Like, we talked about FFP and all of that. You see, this all comes into it. Do you know what I mean? And I think when you look at what Tuchel did with that really horrendous, worst Chelsea squad ever that won a Champions League, like, it's kind of miraculous, really, that he went into that squad. Down. Yeah, like he went there and beat the best team in the world, obviously Manchester City. But again, these things with management, sometimes, Scott, you have to work with tools that are not perfect. And that's what he did at Chelsea. And I think the whole thing is that I think if they'd stuck with him, I think Chelsea would be in a better place now than they are under, say, Pochettino. Like, I think they'd be top four. I do, because they'd have just lost less games, do you know what I mean, than maybe they have in terms of style. So, yeah, thanks you all for those comments, because there's other great comments there, and a lot of people, I think, looking at this with clear eyes rather than it just being kind of shock jock of, do you love Tuchel or not? I don't think anyone really loves him, but there is a lot of sense behind this potential appointment.
Yeah, there's a long tweet which explains all of Tuchel's fallouts with previous clubs
at
Dortmund and the... Yeah. I'm not going to... I won't read this. It's too long. But there's fair points here. The fallout of Dortmund, you know, it's legit. I mean, maybe we'll put the tweet in the description or something like that. But yeah, I mean, he does have a history of falling out with people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that could well happen. But do the pros outweigh the cons? Like, potentially. Or I will say, and the reason why I'm not jumping straight at this is because I think at some point within 12, 18 months, people will look at it and go, oh, this is boring, isn't it?
Potentially, yeah.
And I think that will happen. But maybe that's the argument for it being a stopgap.
Yes.
You know? Or if it does, if there's an agreement between the two, 3 year deal or whatever, like, this is the job for now. We'll review how it goes 2 years in, and then maybe we'll make a decision from there. And if he can continue with it. But hey, this, we've all looked at this and we've all said, this isn't going to be miraculously turned around in 2 years or in 1 year. You know, the squad isn't going to miraculously be overhauled in 1 year. And really, this is the safest pair of hands, I think. Unless you're so in on what Ten Hag is doing, unless you are, I'm not there anymore. This does seem like a fair outlook, and you can exactly see why Ineos would do it.
Of course, you would. If you are the sporting director, you are the CEO, and you're sat there and you're looking at CVs, and you, again, I think eradicate the name Thomas Tuchel. Forget about that. You know, think about just the CV. What has he done? What does he do? And he's been manager of Dortmund, PSG, Chelsea, Bayern Munich, like all super massive football clubs. Yeah, he's won at Chelsea with a poor Chelsea squad. He won the Champions League. He's got to finals elsewhere. You know, his record in the league in the last year or two, not brilliant. Like, you know, we still with Bayern Munich, you expect to win the league and that's it, isn't it, at the end of the day. But he's also got Premier League experience. So he's got all of this, and forget the name is Thomas Tuchel. What else does he do? Well, he solidifies squads. He makes sure that they do defend. He makes sure they do pass the ball and they look after it. You described the word boring there. I use the word serious. Be a serious football team, which includes some of the boring bits that United don't do under Erik ten Hag. So it's a balance there, isn't it? And I think, you know, Scott, when you look at manager to manager, you went from Moyes, dysfunction, get rid. You go to Van Gaal, highly structured, but very boring. You then go to Mourinho, more structure, even more boring, but more physical. Then you go, that doesn't work. So you go super loose. You go to Solskjaer, counterattack, fast, run, but completely manic. And then you go to Ten Hag because he's the moderate. That's what you wanted Ten Hag to be, is to do a little bit of both. And unfortunately, Scott, he's gone the complete opposite way. He's gone super Ole. You know, it's more chaotic than ever before. So you have to ground it back, don't you? You have to look for a coach that looks like Tuchel. And that's the thing. It's not a personal choice, like I just said. But you're right. It's the safest pair of hands for the next year or two. And they would be saying to Tuchel in year one, right, we'll get you some new players, work with this lot that you've already got. Your job is to get top four, because we're going to come sixth or seventh or whatever. And that's the aim this year. No other aims. Let's keep it simple, yeah? And we rebuild the squad, and you help us do that within the pyramid. You don't choose the players, but we help that you get the players that you need, that kind of talent. And he's proved in the past, Scott, that he works in that system really well. He's proved it. He's proved it. He's got the right talent, that he can do stuff, and he loves Mason Mount. So there you go.
Well, Mason Mount's got to be fit to play before a manager can use
operational pair of legs.
Hmm. Look, let us know in the comments what you think about Tactical Tommy. He's quite divisive. He is quite divisive.
Yeah.
And I understand why people wouldn't want that to happen.
Hmm.
But also, you look at the list of people available now. I look at Ruben Amorim. I don't know. He's just been speaking to West Ham. He's not going to Liverpool. But again, he's Ten Hag. Like, I know people will look at the differences between... Oh, look, but you know, his football's so great at Sporting.
Mm.
And he's the modern new manager. There's every single chance that Arne Slot, Ruben Amorim, all of these people who are like in their domestic leagues winning them, every chance they don't succeed. Because we just tried this with Erik ten Hag.
Exactly.
You know? And that's I don't want to generalize, but that's what football is. You know,
totally in a nutshell. And that's the whole thing, is that that's why you have to make football appointments completely non-personal, because it's just facts. It's just, what is the team doing? What are the results? What's the style of play? Where do you want to go? And I think the whole thing is, like, you just reeled all those coaches off. Do you know what, Scott? Every coach you can think of generally gets sacked in their career. Generally, like, you know, everyone, even the top ones, like, we've had two Hall of Fame coaches in Mourinho and Van Gaal, and they've not just been sacked at Man United. You know what I mean? But they're still going to be remembered as greats, aren't they, of what they've done, their body of work. So I think when you look at Tuchel, I think the interesting thing is, again, when you look at club to club, Dortmund fans liked him. PSG fans didn't like him. Chelsea fans really didn't like him. Bayern fans...
I'm going to disagree with that. Chelsea fans love him.
I think in hindsight, now Chelsea fans loved him, but I think at the time, especially with the change and with what Todd Boehly promising to put Chelsea back on top of the mountain, is that Chelsea fans appreciated what Tuchel did in the early days, but when he went, it was a bit like, okay, we understand. But I think when you talk to Chelsea fans now, there is a little bit more sympathy towards him than there was at the time. But I'm talking just about general vibe of it. And like, Bayern fans like the appointment, but have also gone the other way and gone, oh, well, it doesn't work. You know, it's not working. He's fallen out with this person again and whatever. I think the thing is with Tuchel is that we got to get away from that. This is not about personality politics. It's not about who do we like. Who do we like to be the Man United manager? It's about who will do the job right. It's just that. And I want Tuchel to be as faceless as possible at Man United. Go and fix the squad. Get players playing good football. And it shouldn't be about the manager. We don't want Guardiola Mark II, because Guardiola Mark II doesn't exist. We don't need that personality. But there's loads of good coaches out there, and you've got a load of choice. But there's no doubt, again, I think they will go for a moderate choice. And I think that is Tuchel. There's not anyone else who's got his CV and won a Champions League. I can't think of anyone else anyway, Scott. There are plenty of coaches out there in world football. But even you say you went for a De Zerbi, let's do that. You go for a De Zerbi, De Zerbi's got absolute catalogues of failure behind him, right? And yeah, he's done well at Brighton. Was he won? Like, you know, again, we always hold this up.
You don't need to talk to me about De Zerbi.
I know what you feel about De Zerbi, but you can put that case for absolutely everyone, like Graham Potter and all of these people. Even Gareth Southgate, you know, has done a credible job with England, but the football's not particularly good and wasn't particularly good at Middlesbrough. So, like, there's always these things. If you compare their CVs to someone like Tuchel, there's really no comparison, is there? Like, Tuchel is the outstanding candidate if you were looking at kind of 8 or 9 or 10 different managers. And guess what? He's going to be available. He's not going to cost you any compensation. There's no fight to get him out. You've just done this with Dan Ashworth, haven't you? Fighting to get him out of a football club. You've just done it now with Wilcox. You don't really want to do that again in the summer. So you're looking at someone who is available and wants the job. And we do know that Tuchel likes United, like you said as well, and I said. It's something that I think he would be massively motivated to do. And I think Ineos look at that carrot and think, yeah, that could be a good marriage there.
I would just like to put it on record that it will end up, I'm pretty certain it will end up in he gets sacked. I just don't know how, I don't know when.
What, Tuchel?
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure people will, it will end up in, this is boring, I want more. But I'm not saying that you can't win trophies along the way. Like,
course,
if I had to pick one person to get United challenging for a title quickest, I'd give it him.
And that's why you do it, for that exact reason. Like, you don't try to predict the future and go, he will get sacked. It's like you do it, right? What happens in year one and two and three? I just to make the Mourinho comparison, because I know a lot of people have made that, and I want to kind of address that. Because, again, Mourinho at pre-United at Chelsea, and even at Real Madrid to an extent, yeah, hated his football. Like, horrible. Ugh. And people were like, why is it, Rob, you want Mourinho at United? And I was like, well, no, because I want stability. I want tactical stability, and I want a kind of building block point. And I always say this about Jose, and I'll say it about Tuchel. When you're winning, it's all good. Yeah, if you're winning the style of football, you can take it. You win 1 or 2 nil every week or whatever, and you can take it, can't you? When it goes wrong, it's then almost ultra hard to take at all, because you're like, what is the team doing? Why is it so boring? Why is it so pathetic? I think that's kind of where we are with Eric, isn't it? Now we're looking at the team, they're a pathetic bunch, all of them, and something needs to change. So I think that's why Tuchel is the guy and probably will get the job, is because he's kind of gives you those Mourinho principles. But as you just said there, he will probably get sacked one day, Scott, but every coach tends to, unless you're one of these top one or two or three who stay at clubs for, you know, the best part of a decade. Besides that, every coach goes at one day, and you have to accept that, not look for your next Fergie. That doesn't exist. It really doesn't. You just got to work with what's on the market. Tuchel will be a free agent come the summer.
Unai Emery looks like he's signing a new deal at Aston Villa.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Emery's interesting though, isn't it? Because like Emery, nope. Again, failure nope. at... But failure at up, let's just go through it. Failure at Arsenal, yeah. Success in other places, really good in the kind of minor European competitions. Comes to Villa, has a mandate, has a fairly decent squad, has a fairly decent budget, and shows that with a style of football that is not the most exciting in the world, but you can solidify things and you can get up the table. It's where we are, isn't it? We need to solidify things and get up the table, because we're going that way down. We're going towards mid-table. So that's, I think, again, why it makes sense. Emery, I wouldn't want at United, but look at the Arsenal thing. The Arsenal fans now telling me Emery was actually all right, whereas at the time, Arsenal fans absolutely hated Unai Emery. So it's all about winning, isn't it, at the end of the day, and trying to put football teams out that don't completely capitulate.
Right.
He's done well at Villa, Emery. Like, well,
he
done
has too. Done well at Villa, but amazing, I think he's stepping up from that to a team that you look. United should be held to the standard where every year they should be winning the league. Not every year. I'm not saying that they should win the league every year, but they should be competing, and they should be in that conversation. They haven't been for 11 years, so
yeah. Don't lose 17 games in a season. Like, that's my first mandate. Don't lose 17. Maybe you lose 8, and I think that's where you go. And if you do that, guess what, Scott? You'll be higher up the table. It's as simple as that.
Right, we'll wrap it up there, I think. We'll be back later this week. United play in the... They play Sheffield United, right, Wednesday? Yeah.
Yes, they do. Like, we might have already played them by the time you've watched this show, or when you watch this show, because it's a... But it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because Sheffield United are absolutely...
It's not a tricky one. It shouldn't be
a
tricky one.
Dogs awful. They are awful. This Sheffield United team under Wilder is a hot mess. So, like, we talk about Ole's Watford, don't we, quite a lot. Like, this is an opportunity here where you should go and smash Sheffield United, and then you should go and put the sword to Burnley, get 6 points and make it look good. And that has to be the level. That's it. That's the expectation. This is Manchester United. Look at this badge here. This is what we are. We know what we are. We know what we need to do. So you can't come out of those two games and go, oh, we got injuries. Oh, we didn't play so well. Oh, we didn't. Oh, we no, 6 points, good performances, and that's the standard. And if you don't meet that standard, then obviously knocks on the door, come and visit the CEO who's on his gardening leave, and we'll sort out a new manager. And that's really the way it will go.
Right, everyone, that's it from us today. We will see you later this week for another Promised Land podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your audio shows on Apple and Spotify, and give us a 5-star review as well. Watch us on YouTube, the Promised Land and Man United podcast. Like the stream, subscribe, leave a comment. And yeah, comment about anything that we've talked about today. Tell us your thoughts on Tommy Tuchel, because I generally could see it happening, I think. Hit the notification bell so you never miss a show, and give us the social follows at @_ScottSaunders, @_Rob_B, and @TPLMUFC. And until next time, from Rob and from myself, at least we're in the FA Cup final. I'm just going to cut my ears to celebrate. There you go.
Do you know what? It wasn't a bit too much made of that. Like, what do you think? To end the show.
Do this now.
Yeah, go on. Just do it now, because we'll put a bow on it.
people don't like Anthony.
Exactly. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty pathetic, to be fair. And I tweeted before the end or before the penalties. I was like, I think United are going to lose the penalties, but they dare not celebrate if they win. Because that's how I was feeling. Like you have literally blown this. If you get another chance and you win, that is not something to celebrate, even if you go into a final. That's kind of how I felt about it at the time. And then obviously I get why Højlund celebrated, because he's 20 and he just scored the winning penalty. And obviously he turns around and then nobody follows him, bar Eriksen, who's his best mate at United. But then you see Anthony, I saw it in real time as well. He just turned around and goes like this, like cups his ears. You think too much was made of it? I think it is massively overblown. I do agree with that. It's massively overblown, but people don't like him.
He's petulant. He's a little bit of a boy, too much of a boy. But, and this is again a cultural thing, that South Americans want to win and they'll do whatever they can to win. That's just the truth. Yeah. And British people find all of that weird. Like a lot of people are like, oh, wasn't Harry Maguire good shaking everyone's hands afterwards? Well, that's what you expect anyway. So it's like, you know, I'm not going to dig one out to kind of, you know, look at the other. I thought about it. Yeah, it's a little bit petulant. It's a little bit silly. But we just watched Man United be completely awful for the last hour. And that to me is what I'm bothered about. I'm bothered about the football. And yeah, you might give Anthony a slap on the wrist, but like literally like problem number 500 at Man United. So I think, again, social media made too much of that. And they're like, oh, it's disgusting. It's like, well, it might not be the most disgusting thing Anthony's ever done in his life. So I think ultimately we look at it that way. And I think you just let it go. Like people like cupping your ears. Kind of very Suarez. I can imagine Suarez doing that for Liverpool, you know, like getting at the opposition.
Also a very likable guy.
Exactly. And just because it's Coventry, again, I don't think you got beat what's in front of you, you know. So it's, you know, I don't feel sorry for Coventry in that manner, or in a professional term, sporting terms. And I think too much was made of it. Like you said, it was because it was Anthony is why people really kicked off about it. If it was someone else, might have just got like forgotten about quite quickly. No one tweets about it. No one gets excited about it. You're right. Højlund scored the goal. I felt bad for him. He scored it, celebrated and turned around and no one was there because everyone was a bit like, it was embarrassing, wasn't it? So, but he took his penalty well. And actually, we didn't say that, did we, in the show? They took their penalties well. Bar Casemiro, who was trying to do a Bernardo Silva and chip it down the middle and was made to look silly, but all the other penalties were pretty good.
Well, the good news is it's over now and United have got the FA Cup final. So
yeah,
hopefully we can just dawn on that fact now and just get away from reality.
Do you know hopefully what will happen, Scott? Do you know what I really want to happen in the Cup final? I'm going to make a prediction of what I want. I want United to be the most boring they've ever been, with the lowest block you've ever seen, and beat Man City with a mad one counter-attack, and that's it, and win 1-0. Man City can have 700 shots in the game and you win 1-0. I think that's your only chance. I think if you go out there and try and play, you know, punch with them, City will just punch you in the face over and over.
United bring Tuchel in before May 25th, then maybe that'll happen.
But I've had tweets, people saying, do you sack the manager between now and the cup final? And if you lose to Sheffield, no, of course you don't. Like, I don't think that's the obvious Ineos choice. But if you lose to next two games to relegation fodder, then I don't know. What you probably stick to into the end of the season, but a sacking wouldn't then be a massive surprise if, say, they think it's fundamentally broken and they just want to get the manager out the door. So I don't think they'll do that, though.
Right, there's a bonus 4 minutes for you, but all right, we're done. Until next time, this has been The Promised Land. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. FA Cup final awaits also. Whatever's going to happen against Sheffield United and Burnley over the next few days, you don't know, really, do you? But until next time, everyone, see you soon and have a fantastic week.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.